Hello, everyone. Before I start the episode, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who has listened, downloaded, and shared this podcast. We are always trying to improve, and all the feedback you have given us has been great. I would also like to encourage you to subscribe to our daily newsletter to stay up to date on the newest podcast episodes, industry insights, and Mercator Advisor Group commentary. Again, thank you to everyone who comes and listens to our episodes, and now, on with the show. Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about protecting account-based payments in the real world. And to help me with that conversation, I have Dave Worthington, the VP of Payments at Rambus. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Ryan, pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Now, to get things started, why don't you give our audience a little bit of an introduction about Rambus?
Yeah, certainly. Rambus is a U.S. NASDAQ-quoted company that came from a background in intellectual property, mainly securing things related to memory and serial buses, going back far enough, and then basically innovations all around making things better for most of the household names you'd know in terms of mobile handsets, PCs, and a number of other devices. The underlying intellectual property that we license into them helps things work faster and more securely. And over the years, we've moved out from just doing the very technical intellectual property development into areas more related to actual security cores, services around those, which now takes us into the securing the IoT space. And over the last few years, Rambus acquired some companies that make up the Rambus Security Division, which includes payments and ticketing, which in their own right had quite long-running heritages, which do lots of things around securing mobile payments, EMV cards, and ticketing, smart ticketing in various formats. So it's a split between stuff in the data center and on the hardware level, and then securing stuff out at the mobile edge, which is all of the applications and things around things like payments and ticketing.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. Now, let's dive into talking about the subject around fraud here. So how is fraud impacting account-based payments?
Yeah, well, probably first clarifying in terms of the scope of account-based payments. So effectively, you're looking at anything where it's an account to another bank's account transfer. And that can be anything from the large value bank-to-bank transfers, corporate-related activities, payrolls, billing, credit card bills, for example, are charged to accounts, and any other form of interbank payment or transfer, whether you're moving money between your accounts in different banks, paying off small fees to other people, or even just transferring stuff to pay your children at college. Secondly, there are a number of fraud scenarios, but basically they boil down to substituting account numbers, so inserting an alternate fraudster's account number into the payroll or the biller's direct debit list or even the bank account system itself. And some of these have been for very significant published amounts. So certainly at the larger end of the scale, highly published incidents in terms of the frauds in the Bangladesh and Mexico market. But for a lot of markets, they're just a normal part of this happens occasionally. On the second side, in terms of that, you've also got basically more the conning fraud, where somehow somebody manages to get you unwittingly to change the number you're paying to, and then a while later you realize you haven't paid the right person. Fake requests to pay to all sorts of consumers, which, because it seems to have come through the right channel, you've replied to, and some quite complex business email compromises that have large corporates paying out significant fees to suppliers or even in terms of what they thought were taxes, and the money then disappears into somebody else's account and the fraudsters have got it.
Excellent. So now we've heard the phrase here before in terms of real time and faster payments. So with faster payments, you're going to have faster fraud. So how does real time or faster payments make it even more challenging?
If you take the banking systems, they came from a background, particularly from check, and then moving into generically automated clearinghouses, etc., that they had a multi-day settlement period. And during that settlement day period, where in the bad old days you could wait anything from 3 to 10 days before the money would actually finish transferring and you'd got it, could spend it. There were a number of checks that could be done. Even as that speeded up a little bit, as has been a general policy for all the banks, you still had at least part of a business day in which large batch systems could run fraud and risk profiles, generate large lists of suspect transactions, and then manual intervention could happen where people could go in, and even if it was only a half of a business day, check some of those, maybe even phone up the customer, say, do you really want to pay this money out of your account to this other person? Real-time payments, when you're talking 15 seconds or so, those batch systems can't run the checks, there's no triggers, and there's definitely no time for those manual checks to go. So you lose what in some countries was certainly a large proportion of what they relied on to weed out the more easily spotted suspect transactions. The other thing with real-time payments is it's very much direct credits, so it's a push transaction, so it's basically an onus on, if you said pay this account, if there's something wrong with it, it's your fault. So it makes it more difficult.
Great. Now, Rambus is a tokenization expert, so what role can this technology play?
At the theoretical level, what you're taking is you've got a unique sensitive piece of data, the bank account, that's very difficult to change. It might be relatively simple to change something like a credit card by saying it's been breached in this, send me a new one, and in the intervening 3 to 10 days, I'll probably start using something else in my wallet. If you walk into a bank and say, there's been a fraud on my account, please give me a new account number, you're going to get a very strange look from the person on the other side of the desk because they're just not built to do that kind of thing. So what happens is you replace that sensitive, unique piece of data, the account number, with multiple tokens, which look like accounts and process like accounts, so the underlying systems aren't impacted. But those tokens are each relation specific. So I have a token between me and whoever's paying my salary on their payroll system. I have another token with each of the billers who are accessing via direct debit my accounts for me to pay all of my different monthly bills, and then different tokens I can use for me to randomly send money to different members of my family at various stages and other people I might know from a purely one-off relationship of having to pay my half of a business dinner or something. Not only are those tokens unique to that relationship, so if you have any form of breach, then it's only that relationship that's impacted. That token can't really be used for anything else. But the token can have attributes, what we call domain controls, that you can actually check systematically as part of any transaction that goes through the system and say, okay, this is a token used to pay government for taxes. And the account that it's being paid to from this specific thing isn't a government account, so that's not right.
All right. Now, keeping with that tokenization subject here, now, how does tokenization fit into Brink's fraud prevention measures?
So you've got a number of different areas. I mean, at the base level, you can just systematically, as each transaction's going through the system, a little bit like in the card world, what's happened in e-commerce in replacing card on file with tokens on file for those properties of making them relationship specific, you can start to push through each time a regular billing occurrence happens or other thing, a replacement account number to go in their system, so tokens start to propagate around it. You can then also more proactively say, okay, I want to be able to have my banks and their consumers through their business banking client or a consumer's mobile banking application actively say, I want a token for this, and then give it to whoever the third party is for any new payment relationship. And consumers and certainly corporates are much happier if they understand there's a level of security with that than in some countries being forced in order to pay for a mobile person-to-person transaction, reciting to some other person their 27 to 29 digit international banking account number for a $2 Starbucks or whatever it might be. So it's really about just basically pushing out what services people would like and enabling those tokens to get into the space. For the most part, where it is account to account, it looks like a bank account number, but when you then get into directory services and enabling new things, so I mentioned mobile person to person, it could be some form of corporate system for dealing with their suppliers. You can potentially use other formats that only get translated back into accounts when they touch the directory service.
Right. Now, I think that you briefly touched upon this, but I'd like to kind of go a little bit deeper into it. Now, is security and fraud prevention really the only benefit of tokenization?
No, I mean, there's a couple more benefits. One of them is, to some extent, there's a level, you know, you're protecting a credential by giving relationship-specific ones. So if you treat the account as being part of your personally identifiable information, by replacing it with tokens in all of the different databases that have your payment information, there is a level of privacy that's going in there. And certainly from the directory services point of view, tokenization is a strategic tool to let national initiatives or even bank-specific initiatives using that solution for enabling new services. So we talked about mobile P2P. There's a number of countries that don't currently have some of the major players in that space, whether it's the various OEM pays or some of the prepaid schemes, that either don't want to wait until they come, or the banks have said, we'd like to offer some service ourselves. And to do that, if we've got a directory service and the underlying account-to-account basis, we can start doing mobile person-to-person and use that for whenever we need to fund money into the system or pay money out of it into a bank account. And similarly for corporates and other areas, there's a whole level of new services that you could offer that fit right on top of the rails for just doing account-to-account payments.
All right. Now, from the view of the central bank payments infrastructure, where does this fit in and who benefits?
Well, in terms of benefit, it's one of those things that it's a national or industry benefit, because at the moment, your central processor might say, if you give me valid account numbers and tell me to push a transaction from here to here, I will do it. And if it processes, tick in the box. When you later find out that the account holder that's pushed the money out, or conversely for direct debit fraud, expected all of that money to come in, hasn't got it, and it's gone somewhere else, well, the system's not failed, but somehow the wrong account's been paid. And those kind of frauds, you know, can be all sorts of things, but there's a net issue for that nation, that system. And there's different ways it can be impacted. If you take some of the large frauds where nationally, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions have suddenly disappeared out of the banking system, A, that's a lot of money going to criminals for various purposes. B, you know, somebody's got to pay for that in some way. It might end up being the end account holders. It could be the banks, and those banks may well have reserves of money and or insurance. And for some of the frauds, if it's under a certain value where it's basically too expensive to investigate, they just write it off. It becomes a cost of business. Well, if you take the parallel with EMV for payment cards, where that cost of business starts becoming noticeable to the central regulators, they're going to turn around and say, you need to make this better. And one of the issues has certainly been that with EMV in the card payment space and related mechanisms in terms of card not present, payments for e-commerce, etc., fixing those areas, more and more of the fraud is moving into the account to account-based payment space. You know, fraud will migrate to the areas where it's easiest to operate, and the values that go through those systems are significantly higher in nearly all countries than go through the card networks. So, as I say, the issue from the point of view is it's the whole industry. So you then have to come back with a, you know, is it a national mandate to fix this, or do the banks own the processor and the banks say, well, we're losing money directly because of this, so we need the process to fix this. In terms of where it might lie, you're then getting to analogous to what's happened in terms of the card payments. You have these islands of processing. Usually there will be a central system for a country that does the ACH or real-time payment transactions. And it makes most economic sense for the tokenization to be centered as a service as part of what that's doing anyway. That's the least cost in terms of the banks and the most effect. If the individual banks do it, then they can protect themselves, but all of the bank-to-bank still suffers the same issues. So it, holistically for the industry, it tends to be better if it's a central, based around the central processor for those.
Excellent. Now, is anyone doing this already?
We are implementing this with some of the providers who provide those in some countries. We're not aware of anybody else who's implemented it as part of any real-time payments or other initiatives that have been done recently in the batch-based ACH space. And we're not aware of any competitors who are advertising a similar capability. So, yes, it's happening, but so far as we know, it's only us that's doing this for the industry at this stage.
All right. And before we wrap things up here, one final question. Now, as we take a look at 2018 and beyond, what would you say you're the most excited about seeing in the payments industry?
I think, you know, there's a lot going on in the account-to-account based payment space anyway. We've got a growing trend for some of the payments in each country starting to be moved to the real-time payment spaces. And one of the advantages of that is you can then offer, instead of these inter-day settlement type slow processes, you can offer mobile person-to-person transactions. You can offer more real-time payment services based on it, but using the underlying rails to do it. And there's certainly a lot of demand in a number of countries for doing that, and where the banks either don't yet have the support of the various players who may be trying to enable that for card schemes, or some of the players in that market decided the card-based model is too expensive for people moving money between themselves for small values and not wanting to pay large merchant service commission fees. There's a lot of requirements for doing more account-to-account in more strategic, more exciting and faster ways, but with that is the necessity for it to be done securely. And it's been nice. We've got existing customers from the card side in terms of our token service provider software that they run for various national and international schemes that have come back to us where they also do account-to-account based and said, it doesn't make sense to only do one side of the house. And the other side of the house has got a lot more value in it. So it's really exciting in terms of the acceleration of people saying, we need to do more with tokenization, and you've got the capabilities, so we want to do it with you.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you very much for taking the time today for speaking to us about protecting account-based payments in a real-time world. And we hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
My pleasure, Ryan.